don't they know it's Christmas over there on Talking Foosball? Well, we suppose that all you wanted for Christmas was Santa being open to you and a bottle of booze, and an all-new edition of Talking Foosball Aufstieg. So, here it is. My name is Nick Wiltang, and joining me is the most Christmassy person that I know of. It is none other than tactics expert Jasmine Barber. And Jasmine, are you in the Zweite Bundesliga spirit today?
Yes. There was a lot going on during the weekend with the matches, and we have a new Hubmeister.
We do indeed. So on this edition of Aufstieg, we'll be doing a bit of housekeeping regarding the latest developments in the league, and in part two, we'll give you the list of the five most valuable players in the league. Let's start off where we usually start off these days. It's with, well, Hansa Rostock. They had a great start to the season. I bigged them up, said, well, maybe they might even attack for top five finish. But even though my prediction looked very good and accurate early on, things quickly unraveled on the pitch. And to make matters worse, their fans, they have not really put forward their most exemplary faces. So what happened last weekend during their away trip to Paderborn, Jasmine?
The match was suspended for a short time yet again. Not as long as the previous week. What was the one they...
Schalke.
Yeah, Schalke. Yeah, it was 25-30 minutes. We saw that go 80 minutes into the first half. Yeah, so it was only a quick delay. I can't remember how long it was, but it was a delay all the same when they started setting off pyro. One pyro made it to the halfway line, which is when the referees started to call off the players and move off the pitch. And yeah, it was, again, a mess. The weirdest thing is, it was 0-0 when that happened. It wasn't like they were losing or losing badly, which I still don't condone. But, you know, when fans are angry and they do stuff. But it was 0-0. You've disrupted the play. How do you think that's going to help your team? And that's not even the worst of it. As they went on, they went 1-0 down. And then I believe their goalkeeper got sent off. Someone got sent off for Hansa Rostock.
Goalkeeper, yeah.
Yeah.
Their goalie.
And then, yeah, they finished losing even worse. There was no way for them to get back in. And I believe, I haven't looked at the table. I just know Kiel is first. Let me just have a...
16th now.
Yeah. So, you know, away to Paderborn isn't... Okay, Paderborn are in a little bit of form now, but they were a couple of weeks down in the slumps with them. It's not the most unwinnable game. It's probably a little bit easier than Schalke. But you'd then lose that 3-0.
It's, you know, it's Hansa Rostock. Well, after the match, officials and players alike, they've sort of found it hard to condemn their own fans. The aforementioned goalkeeper Golke told Sky after the match, quote, "I really didn't need fireworks to be thrown onto the pitch." The higher-ups said that they couldn't defend the actions of their fans, but they really had the darndest of times condemning them for what they've shown themselves to be this season. Now, once it became clear that an innocent bystander was severely beaten by a Hansa fan who had, you know, gotten through some police and gotten into a neutral zone, and that innocent bystander then suffering from serious head injuries having to be rushed to hospital... In addition to that, Hansa's fans also demolished facilities on Paderborn's premises. That made the club change its tune and calling these actions out for what they are, saying that, well, we'll be happy to, you know, reimburse Paderborn for the economic losses that they have suffered. Which is sort of like, well, yes, this is finally an adequate answer. But the question is, shouldn't they have done this years ago? I mean, this is not something new, is it?
Mm-mm. Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, it was hard for them to condemn their fans until it started costing them actual money. I think that's pretty funny. This has been brewing. As you said, we've always touched on Hansa Rostock and what they've done. And it seems to have gone up a notch. Oh, that was another thing that happened in that game. Was it initially postponed because they got into the neutral area? Or was that the Schalke game?
See, that was the Schalke game, but to be fair to Hansa Rostock, it was actually... The Schalke fans first getting into the neutral zone. I mean, there was sort of like a plexiglass barrier. What you have to know about the Ostseestadion is that basically the away fans and the ultras are next to one another. And then there's sort of like a buffer zone of like 10, 15 yards between them. And at first it was actually Schalke fans using a hammer to smash the plexiglass.
How the fuck did they get a hammer in? This is the thing, like, I swear to God, there's like metal detectors and there's people searching you. How are they managing to do this?
I mean, if you pop up at a Bundesliga match with a can of beer, you're told to empty it out and not take it into the stands. But a hammer gets through.
Pyro as well.
Pyro gets through. I mean, it's marvelous what these people can put their minds to. But anyways, but you know, that really sparked off things and got a reaction from the Hansa fans, which made it rather unsafe. And that match was close to being abandoned as well.
I mean, Schalke's fans have some history as well. I remember when they got relegated and they rushed the training pitch and it was quite ugly. Mm. Yeah. So, ultras, sorry. So, yeah, Schalke versus Hansa Rostock. I wouldn't want to be between that, to be quite honest with you.
You don't want to stand in that buffer zone of 15 yards in between the two sets of... I think there are more comfortable places to be. And the orderlies didn't look like they wanted to risk their life getting in between those two sets of fans.
But on that note, if they should have done this years ago, I mean, there's a growing problem with certain sets of fans across Germany, but especially Hansa Rostock. They should have obviously been cracking down on these fans and hooligans before. It's also interesting to see in other countries, there's also a violence problem. So if we look to Greece, they have actually made all games ghost games. So no crowds at all in any of the, I'm not sure if it's lower divisions, but it's definitely the first division. After violence spilled out, and I think two fans have died since the start of the season. So they've gone no fans until February. And with Germany being such a big fan culture, big football fan culture, and these incidents rising, you don't want to ruin the actual spectacle of going to a game. And if these things start to continue, you can bet there won't be like away fans for anyone. That's going to be the new thing, that no club has an away set of fans. And we're moving fastly towards that if this behavior keeps up.
Well, I mean, Hansa Rostock are spectacular at setting a bad example for everyone else whenever they go on the road. I mean, there was the incidents against St. Pauli where, you know, the premises of the club were smashed as well. Now they smashed them in Paderborn. There have been multiple incidents involving Hansa Rostock fans that have been unpleasant, to say the least. Yet, they're still allowed to travel with fans. They're still allowed to play in front of their own fans. And somehow nobody has thought over that concept of having, you know, the away fans and the Hansa Rostock ultras right next to one another. Should certain measures be taken? Should, for instance, Hansa Rostock receive a ban on away fans, or even a ban, a stadium ban, or a ban of, you know, having fans present at their stadium? Is that something that the DFB and the DFL should consider?
I think you have to. I mean, there can be like stadium bans and etc., but for some reason they're not carried out. And if that kind of problem keeps on going, is reoccurring, then I don't understand what else you can do. I mean, it is obviously stemming from societal problems, and until that's fixed, you're going to get these problems. So it's kind of, we need a prevention than cure level, but right now, no one's looking out for prevention, so there needs to be cures for the ones that are there making this trouble.
Well, I'm really not one for collective punishments, but at this stage, when people are close on the verge of dying, I think certain measures should be on the table. Anyways, let's move away from Hansa Rostock and the unruly fans. We do know that they've been put on the bad list by Santa, meaning that they'll have to spend their Christmas in the bottom three alongside two other teams from the north of Germany. But hey, funnily enough, the three sides topping the table are also northerners. HSV is on the promotion playoff spot after they won against Nürnberg. Seems to be their natural place under Tim Walter. And Holstein Kiel have only lost once in the last 10 matches and are on top. And wedged in between Holstein Kiel and HSV is St. Pauli, who are still unbeaten but who have failed to open up a large gap down to the rest of the chasing pack, as they've drawn 9 of their 17 matches. 9, more than half. So, questions we need to ask are as follows. Can Kiel keep it going? Are HSV going to find the stability to finish top? And are Sampaoli finally going to be able to break their spell of having one good year followed by a really, really bad year? So, let's start with Kiel then. Can they keep going?
Kiel confuses me because I still don't know what they are. And I can't say if they're going to keep this up or not. I'll tell you what they do have. They do have a really well-worked team. They have no real stars. Like, they have no pinnacle player. Like, Pauli has Marcel Hartl or Elias Saad you can pick up, or Jackson Irvin or Carol Metz. You can pick 5 very good players that have been well-performing. Kiel have all better-than-average performing, but you can't go, this person for sure. And I think that makes them quite dangerous. You don't know what they're going to really come out with. And I think they've kind of shocked a lot of people. They're definitely scoring more than average, but they're not scoring the most. They've definitely got a weaker defense. One little tidbit from Kiel is that their keeper, Timo Weiner, he's basically saved the most amount of goals, or his saves have been the most important. And if you removed him, Kiel would be probably with less goals and less points. So they're definitely the surprise pick this year. We know the old curse about the Herbmeister, so we'll have to see if that affects them at any point. But yeah, every time that Kiel have tried to go up for promotion, well-worked team, good football, and we just have to see where they end up.
And an exciting coach in Marcel Rupp, right?
Yep. A very more possessional-based kind of coach. He's done a lot of good hard work. And yeah, it's normally what Kiel produce. They can do that with a lot of coaches.
One of the teams that really gave them a severe spanking, though, was Sampaoli, who are still unbeaten. I think Sampaoli won something like 5-0 or 5-1 against Holstein Kiel. But yet they are behind them in the table. And that is because once again on this weekend, they had chance after chance after chance after chance to tuck VN Wiesbaden away. VN Wiesbaden got a late counterattack. And as Sampaoli only had scored 1 goal out of their millions and gazillions of chances, that 1 goal that VN Wiesbaden managed to produce with their 2 chances that match was enough to secure them a draw. Is this going to affect Sampaoli? The fact that they seemingly have been the superior side in each and every match, yet they are sort of not breaking or broken away by a huge gap that you would expect by unbeaten side after 17 match days.
Yeah, I think it's starting to be a bit of fatigue and a little bit of, I would say, nerves and confidence issues in there as well. I think people have started to figure out what their team is about, how Herzler sets up his team. And I think the break has come at a good time for him to shake things up and really work with his team to get through those problems. So 1 win in the last 5 and the other 4 being draws is not the best record when you're trying to go for promotion, obviously. But I think it might be good that they're not in the first spot and they have to chase rather than have something to lose. So they can always look at it that way. I think the kind of problem that they're facing right now is goal scoring consistency, kind of the same as Hamburg. Because if you take those 5, they've got the least goals in the top 4. So Düsseldorf have the most, Hamburg and Holstein Kiel, and even Düsseldorf, I'll make the same point as Pauli here. 5 of those goals were against Kiel, then they're down to 26. It's a bit like stat padding with goals. You know, how much were they actually good at scoring goals? Eggestein's not their top scorer. No one in the front 3 is. It's Marcel Hartl, the centre mid, that has most of the goals and assists. Now, that's great, but that can only go on for such a long time. You need other people to really step it up. Eggestein has 6 goals, and then I don't know who their next scorer is, if they even have one in the top. So Eggestein, 6 goals, and then
Jackson Irvine has a few goals.
Yeah, 3 goals, 4 assists. And you have, again, another centre midfielder. What about their wingers as well?
Yeah, I mean, Elias Saad looks creative, industrious, and is a bit of a handful, but he is wasteful whenever he's given chances.
Yeah, 3 goals, 1 assist. It's quite behind everyone else who are also scoring. And as I said, you take the 5 from Kiel, you're on 26 goals. And that's kind of a bit like Dusseldorf. I never find Dusseldorf really solid, but they've scored the most goals. And then I'm like, they scored 5 against Nürnberg and 5 against someone else. It kind of overinflates what they can do sometimes. But they do play good football, but I think this is where it will start to show Hertzler as a coach. Can you work through these nitty-gritties to really get through and get promoted? Or will it fall apart? So that will be fun to see in the second half of the season.
Well, maybe Santa places a goal scorer under the Christmas tree for Fabian Hertzler. Because, yes, the goal-scoring issues have basically been the biggest issues for St. Pauli, and it's going to be exciting to see if they can figure stuff out. Now, HSV, we are recording this on the 18th of December, meaning that HSV are going to have a meeting with Tim Walter to see whether or not he'll continue, so we don't know that by now. Now, Kicker has run a whole pro and contra list of, you know, what points favour HSV sticking with Walter and what points are going against that. I mean, the biggest point in his favour is that he has the dressing room, the dreaded dressing room behind him, according to Kicker. HSV are actually the team producing the most chances. They do have the highest XG of any side in the Bundesliga 2, I think, on average. Yet, they're not terribly good at converting their chances. I mean, in many of the matches they've won, they should have had more goals. Oh, many of the matches they lost, they should have had more goals and made it closer. Now, the question is that going to be enough to save Walter? And, you know, what can they do to remedy those issues? I mean, they're basically the goal scoring is also an issue for this Hamburg side too, right?
I think Hamburg or Glatz will need just another more clinical player or someone else. Glatz is one of the most wasteful strikers. And he looked like he turned the corner at the start of the season. And then he just suddenly went back into old guts and ways. He will be in very good positions and somehow manage to miss. And I think it kind of goes for Hamburg as well as Pauli. That's kind of their main problem. You've got guts scoring. That's great. He's got 12 goals, but that's kind of, I would say, dried up. And then you've got Laszlo Benes with 8 goals and 6 assists. That's great, but he's more of a centre midfielder. And then you've got no one else.
I mean, Banish is actually taking the penalties off the team as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
So he's...
he missed one, so...
He missed a very famous one, which we talked about. But yes, I mean, his number of goals is actually overinflated by the fact that he takes the penalties.
How many penalties has he taken? We need to find out now. I don't think it's been that many. I still think it's 2. And he still has 6 assists, so he's still made 6 goals. But apart from that, you have to go, I think, all the way down to Bakary Yata before you get another goal scorer, which is only 3 goals and 3 assists.
Bakary Yata has been a very streaky player as well, who hasn't really looked comfortable on the pitch as well over the last few weeks. And I mean, what really saves Hamburg in terms of their position in the table is the fact that they really had a great start to the season. I mean, they took 13 points from the first 5 matches, and since then, I mean, the next 12, they basically only took 18 points, which, you know, 1.5 points per game is not a great average if you want to go up.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, you can kind of be like, yeah, maybe it's Walter's time to go, because I think he's had enough chances by now. But then there's also that little bit, it's like, okay, who makes it better? Now, if we look at the rumours, and some of the rumours are, you know, Andre Breitenreiter, that's not going to improve things. I think we can all say that that's not going to improve anything. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but it's not filling me with excitement. If it's someone like we said, Lucien Favre, then maybe. But why would you just get a different guy to make the same mistakes? I just don't see why. Tim Walter's a good coach, as you said. He's probably, despite everything that's happened at Hamburg, has been least affecting of the players, which we've seen it publicly crumble every time. He's given them some foundation. I mean, 3rd's better than the 4th's that they had before. It's kind of the drop down. So... yeah, I can see it both ways.
I mean, I'm of the mindset that probably stick with Walter for now, banking on the fact that Holstein Kiel probably cannot keep this up for an entire season. I mean, their run of form has, you know, lifted them to the top of the table. But it's a funny thing, once that winter break rolls around, you start afresh in January. Some of these form teams really drop off and show themselves to be the sides that they tend to be. And I think Kiel probably doesn't have the obvious qualities to be a promotion side. But hey, there are always surprises in the Bundesliga too. I mean, we've just had Darmstadt and Heidenheim go up. So who knows? Anyways, this is it for part one of the show. We'll be back in a jiff with part two. Welcome back to part two of Talking Fußball, the Ausstieg edition. Now, let's end the year of highlighting a few players who are really making a great difference whenever they step onto the pitch and perform for the teams. And it's really natural to highlight strikers who score tons and tons of goals as, you know, being the greatest difference makers. But that somewhat belittles players in other areas of the pitch, I think. So I've asked Jasmine to compile a list of the five biggest difference makers on the pitch. And Jasmine, how have you gone about compiling that list?
Bad news, they're mostly goal scorers.
Oh, fuck.
I think when we talk about difference makers and being most valuable to your team, it's only natural to go for the ones that there are more metrics in to provide that. And that tends to be goal scoring and assist making. It's not all the time you can have goalkeeper with saves, but if you're talking about one person who greatly makes a difference in your team, it's generally going to be either a more attacking player or a more defensive player with goals and assists. So my list is generally those, because they have definitely been the difference makers in their team and the league. If we didn't talk about so much one person, then it would be a bit more defensive based. But I can link another player with some of them, but we're gone straight one man team kind of. If you take them out, it would have the biggest detriment. So I'm going to start with a really obvious one, and I'm going to go with Haris Tabakovic from Hertha BSC.
Oh, you dealing out some praise for Hertha BSC on our podcast? That is rare.
It's the Christmas spirit. Love to everyone.
Well, there you go, Mr. Matt Herman. Here's your Christmas present.
I think everyone can see the difference he makes on the pitch. I think there would be a few calls for Fabian Lisa as well. But if we're talking about performance, both in attack and also work defensively, you would be crazy not to include him on your list. Without his goals, Hertha would not be anywhere near. And they didn't have his goals towards the start of the season, and they were nowhere near. So with 9 goals and 3 assists, getting closer to Robert Glatzel in the top scorer table, he is definitely the kind of target man, poacher, striker, very box dependent, can hold up play and lay off passes within the box and more attacking areas of the field. And clinical head and feet, which have really made Hertha not look relegation tier. And it's almost crazy how many times they just cross from the left-hand side or the right-hand side and just land it to Tabakovic to then score a goal. And I think that's the main one. If you take him out of the team, and we've seen him out of the team, they are nowhere near close to making anything of this league.
What you're basically saying is that Florian Niederlechner is not an adequate replacement for, or, you know, an adequate compared to Haris Tabakovic then.
He has been also performing well, but in terms of game time and also minutes per this and that and actions, and he ranks higher than Niederlechner. Not to say Niederlechner is bad, I just think he's the most valuable to the team right now. And also Niederlechner got sent off last game anyway, so.
Oh, yes. He wasn't too happy about that. That was a 0-0 draw against
Osnabrück.
Not great. I mean, if they'd won it, they, you know, would have been closer to the promotion ranks. I mean, now they're 6 points behind HSV. But, hey, bigger deficits have been overturned after the winter break. So, Hertha is still with an outside chance for promotion then. How about that? That we didn't predict at the start of the season. Anyways, who's the next guy on your list?
Again, not really a surprising one. I think, again, if you take him out of this team, you don't get the same team, and that's Marcel Hartl from St. Pauli. I think we've gushed about him many a time this season on this podcast. Yeah, 8 goals, 7 assists. Not the leader in the assists or goals, as I've said, but the fact that he can be a central midfielder along with Jackson Irvine, but push as forward as he can to get into those positions where he has been Pauli's top scorer this season and also just top creator in general. He's taken on so many roles. So he's mainly more of a creator, and he still likes to stay back a bit more. So he's really used his efficiency in running, so arriving from deep runs and creating space for others to really create the chances that they have had and the goals that he has scored. So yeah, again, if you take him out of this team, you lose those goals and those assists. And I think that would greatly damage a side that's kind of struggling right now.
Also great set piece taker.
Yep. And that's really important in this. Set piece taker and set piece defender, he doesn't do too badly on. It's kind of funny to see him so much more forward thinking and have his partner in the double pivot, Jackson Irvine, be a lot more defensive. Now, obviously, I could have probably said Jackson Irvine for the same reason, but I just think Marcel Hartl has obviously done more. You can keep a clean sheet, but if you don't score, it will stay 0-0. You have to score to win games, which is such a cliche to say, but that's the only reason why he's such a pinnacle part of the St. Pauli team.
But what you're basically saying is that they are the dynamic duo that makes St. Pauli tick them, Irvine and Hartl. And you sort of cannot get one without the other. I mean, one picks up the slack, the other one is doing the creating.
Exactly.
The next player on the list is also a creator, I take it?
And yeah, Laszlo Benes. Again, people could say, Robert Glatzel, but because of his goals and stuff. But I think we know he can be pretty wasteful, and I don't know. It doesn't seem as effective as Laszlo Benes is. He is another one who can do it all. He's very energetic. And I think we've, again, seen him not, because he wasn't a regular starter last season, and we've seen him within the team and out of the team, and they're a lot better with him. So he is more of a deep line playmaker. So he is really good at unlocking space and effectiveness in building up play from Tim Valter, which is, you know, Tim Valter's main game. It's having possession, working through that possession to break it down. And that added with his goals and assists this season and his general work on the pitch. And is he captain? Who's captain of that team? Mulheim? No.
Sean Lau.
Hoya Fernandes? One of them. Yeah. I think he's making run for, like, he could be captain because he's so vocal as well on the pitch. I think he gives a lot more fire when he's playing than when he's not. So I think he's also been, and also, as I said, it's the same kind of situation where you have a top scorer and then you have someone, the next person, and Laszlo Benes is so far ahead of any other player, where other players should be picking up the wingers instead of Glatzel and Benes all the time, that he's doing so much. You expect Glatzel to score, he's a striker, but Benes picking up that slack instead proves how valuable he's been.
Right, and well, if he performs well, maybe HSV will go up. I think Benes probably arrived at Hamburg a couple of years ago thinking, well, one season in the Bundesliga 2 and I'll be back in the Bundesliga, but hey, he chose HSV. Anyways, next player on the list, also an obvious choice, I take it?
I don't know, is this one obvious? The next two I would felt are the more surprises.
Well, they are from smaller teams.
Yeah, they are. So first I'm going to say Barış Atik from Magdeburg.
But you do have a Magdeburg crush.
Yeah, they're good. I like them. I was really sad when they started to fuck up. Turned it around a little bit, I think. Where are they now? Oh no, they're still on 13th. They lost? I went away from that game thinking they won it. Anyway, Barış Atik. I would call him Mr. Magdeburg. The guy's a terror, and I kind of like the smaller, yappy players, and he is definitely one of them. He is always and everywhere on the pitch, You cannot get rid of him. He is an absolute ass sometimes, and you know where he is because you can hear him. He's also very good at providing for the Magdeburg team far beyond anyone else. He has 2 goals and 8 assists. He's leading in the assist table for the league at the moment. So he's mainly left wing. He can play 10. He likes to move from the left wing into more of the middle. So he is more of that kind of creator role. Very effective in building up play, which, as I said, for Tim Valter, Christian Tigintz's footballing philosophy is not that far off. Very possessional based and vital to this team. And not only is he a part of why this team is staying up, he is also part of the reason why they got promoted. So yeah, last season as well, very, very good form from him. And he's just a part of that team.
Right, next player on the list, him being injured might have cost his coach his job, you were talking about.
Yes! Did you see the injury table and the results?
I did.
So I was shocked when I was going through who was highest performing in their position. And I was kind of shocked to see this one in for the strikers. And it had Ragnar Ache from Kaiserslautern first. Now, I was like, really? And then I looked into it. He's got a good amount of shots. He's good at 2 things. He's good at arriving from deep runs and being a very box-present striker. So a lot of headed, feet, clinicalness, very close range against goalkeeper, and also arriving from those positions from the runs. But then he got injured, and I didn't realise the form Kaiserslautern had while he was playing. So in his first 7 games, he scored in all of them but 1. 6 goals from the first 7. Then he played the next 2. They still won. They drew 1-1. And then when he went off at halftime, they lost. And then for the next 6 games, because he came back last weekend, the next 6 games, he was injured. Kaiserslautern's run was 1 draw. 5 losses. Their form before that with him playing was in 10 games, they had 3 losses, 5 wins, and 2 draws. That's a staggering form change from him, that player being missing. So yeah, a surprise one, but all the same, if that's the kind of form your team gets into after you're injured and you've scored 6 in 7 or even 6 in 9 full games and where you've been winning, that's shocking. That is, now I see why he's so high up that list. The kind of work he does both in attack and defensively with interceptions high up the pitch when pressing. So yeah, definitely the surprise one, the most unexpected one, but also a very big player for Kaiserslautern. And if anyone saw on the weekend, he nearly equalised in the last minutes before they called it offside. We had thought he had done it. And I was like, oh crap, because he's just come back from injury. I think he came on, so he didn't play the full game.
He came on for Terence Boyd in the 64th minute, yeah.
Yeah, so, and he almost made it a draw. So that would have been crazy and a great story to tell on this podcast, but it wasn't meant to be. Maybe after the winter break, he'll be back to his old self.
Well, let's hope so. Anyways, this is it, really. By the way, expecting any footballing-related gifts under the Christmas tree for yourself?
Oh, no. I don't think so. I've asked for really weird things this year. So I've asked for a lot of perfume. I've asked for travel size because I'm always on the go. So to have a tiny one in my hand luggage is great. And also, I always ask for cookbooks and book vouchers because I love, if you're from the UK, I love Waterstones, the shop. I don't know what it is. I fucking love that bookshop.
Waterstones is nice, yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice. I don't know why, but whenever I go to London, just want to hang out in there.
Yeah, I mean, do my book shopping at Waterstones, and if I want to make some food afterwards, I go to Sainsbury's.
Oh.
There's always Sainsbury's. Don't like Tesco's. Sainsbury's is the best. I do miss Sainsbury's from when I was living in the UK.
What about Marks and Spencer's?
It's a bit too posh, really.
It's a little bit nice. price-wise, this is now a supermarket podcast. Their Christmas stuff, really, really great. Their liqueurs, they do some fantastic, like, specific liqueurs, like apple and elderberry, and it's like drinking juice that's 20%.
That will get the job done.
That will polish you off.
That is a Christmas job well done.
I've taken Max to Marks and Spencer's to, you know, pick up food and stuff. He loves it. I don't know if it specifically aims at Germans or it's the food quality or the branding, but he absolutely loves Marks and Spencer's.
I did enjoy Marks and Spencer's too, to be fair. But I mean, it's not only a supermarket, they do have loads of other stuff. I used to shop my clothes there when I was living in the UK.
I don't know why, but I can see that. It just seems very, they're very well built. I can see a Norwegian being like, yes, this is the clothes that I want.
It is indeed. Anyways, this is it for another episode of Talking Supermarkets in the UK. No, Talking Foosball, the Ausstieg edition. I hope you enjoyed it. Jasmine, great chatting with you once again. Please tell our listeners where they can find you on social media and if they should expect any work forthcoming very soon.
No, I don't really write anymore. I just vibe on my social media account. So you can add me on Twitter. I'm _JasmineHahn, which is H-A-H-N.
Like Andre Hahn.
Like Andre Hahn. Or if you're a big movie/Parks and Recreation fan, Catherine Hahn.
Yes.
Love her. She's a funny woman. So, yes, that is how you spell it. You can find me on Blue Sky or Twitter, or I think Instagram is slightly different. It's _JB Hahn.
Right. Well, soon you might be distantly related to her. Who knows? Anyways, my name is Nick Wildtagen. I'm not related to anyone famous, not even slightly. You can find me on X, as it's called these days, @NormMusings. You can find the podcast there as well. Our X handle is @TalkingFoosball. Leave us on review on iTunes if you want to give us a Christmas present. Make sure to check out our Patreon page and, you know, gift yourself with loads and loads of historic Bundesliga content. This episode was produced by Aidan Rantoul. We'll see you in the new year. Have a good one until then. Have a Merry Christmas. It is goodbye from all of us at Talking Foosball.